Hello, everyone. I'm Bill Roggio. I'm a senior fellow at Foundation for Defense of Democracies and editor of FDD's Lone War Journal. This is Generation Jihad, the podcast that covers all things in what used to be known as the global war on terror, but we now call the Long War. Today is Monday, and we're trying to get back on track. I have my friend and colleague at FDD, Joe Truesman. He's my co-host today. Joe is a senior research analyst at FDD's Lone War Journal. He focuses on Palestinian terror groups, Hezbollah, and all the happenings in Israel and the Palestinian territories and beyond. Joe, great to have you on our Monday episode of Generation Jihad.
Yeah, Bill, happy to be back.
Oh, yeah, Joe. Well, let's get into it. There's a lot going on. We got a lot to catch up on. We didn't even do an episode last week on the situation in Israel and in Gaza and the West Bank and Lebanon. And the Houthis are still going on. We're not even going to discuss that today, but let's get at it. Let's just start with, so there was a report last week we wrote up. The U.S. is saying that Marwan Iswa, a top level Hamas leader, the U.S. claimed that he's dead. The Israelis said that they had targeted him. But so far, neither the Israelis nor Hamas, neither have confirmed his death. What's going on here, Joe? Do you think we got him? How is the U.S. coming out confirming his death, and yet we're not hearing anything about this from Israel? I mean, I can understand the Hamas side of it. Things may be likely chaotic over there. But you would think Israel would be touting his death before the United States.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Bill, because right after the U.S., I think it was Jake Sullivan that reported it or stated that Israel killed Marwan Iswa. I spoke with an Israeli a defense official, and I asked him, I was like, well, isn't it kind of weird United States saying this? Wouldn't it be you guys? Wouldn't it be you? And he gave me just some kind of, answers like he didn't know. But he did, I understand he found it odd as well. Maybe politics, I don't know. But it is strange because no, it's not just some random commander, some low level guy. Iso, he was pretty up there, and he's number three, number four, Hamas's leadership in the Gaza Strip. So, nevertheless, found it strange for the United States to say that. Is he dead? He was in a, the Israelis said he was in a tunnel. So, obviously, just due to everything going on, difficult to say who. Difficult to verify, right? You're in an active war zone, trying to go down in there and trying to excavate all this, all this dirt and everything just to try to find out if someone's dead. It's not easy. So, I think right now Hamas hasn't said anything, hasn't said if he's alive or dead. But I think they probably did get him. I think Israel did. I do think Hamas will say something about it if they can confirm it, just because with top leaders, very high level senior leaders, they have admitted or acknowledged their deaths during this war. Okay, so that's important. But the soldiers, foot soldiers, some commanders, they haven't said anything about them for their own reasons. So Hamas, I think, will say something. But nevertheless, yes, I think they did get Marwan Iswa, and there's a lot more. There's still other senior members of Hamas running around, and we'll see if Israel gets them.
So tell us a little bit more about Iswa. What's his role within Hamas? And do you think the Israeli, I'm still puzzled at this. Like, you would think the Israelis would have all the reason to announce his death. And I can't wrap my head around this one, obviously. And I guess I'll stop trying. It's just that this is one of the goals of the Israeli operation. Right. Take out the senior leader, dismantle the senior leadership, destroy Hamas's military capability, set them up so that they can no longer govern, and then move on from there. I just would expect the Israelis to do it. But that's neither here nor there. We're at a guessing game right now. Tell us a little bit more about Iswa.
Yeah.
What is his role in Hamas been?
Yeah, so he is, right, he is deputy of Daif, Mohammed Daif, who was the military leader of Hamas's Al-Qassam brigades. And he's been involved in the Gilad Shalit negotiations. And this was back in 2011, around there. And before that, he had planned attacks on Israeli communities that used to be in Gaza. All right, something like October 7th. On a much smaller scale, of course. Then he's just been involved with all sorts of things within Hamas's military apparatus. So he was up there, you know, he was, so he was an important guy. And of course, Israel accuses him of being one of the planners or being one of the masterminds of behind October 7th. So he's definitely a huge target, right? For the Israelis. So, you know, I'm trying to think, like you were saying, like why Israel wouldn't just come out with it. I think like if they killed him, I think they're pretty certain that they did, right? But they don't have confirmation, actual proof, right? I think that's it. So they tell the Americans, hey, you know, this and that. And maybe they're trying to acknowledge it through the Americans, right? But saving face as well, just in case that, oh, one day he pops up alive, because
it's happened. That's it, Joe. You nailed it. Thanks for that. I was struggling, and that has to be it. They don't want to be caught in a situation where they're claiming he's dead. And Hamas, he pops up in a video or something with a newspaper, right, and Hamas points the finger at him. So that has to be the reasoning. I think I figured that one out on my own. All right. Well, great. Obviously the Israel's operation or pending or upcoming operation to clear out the final bastion of Hamas in the city of Rafah, which is right along the Egyptian border. It seems like we're going to wait forever for this operation to kick off. I think the Israelis are making a mistake by dragging this out. They should just need to rip the Band-Aid off. And every day that there's disagreement over this with its allies, with the U.S. and with Europe, is a day, in my estimation, that the Israelis are just losing the momentum to carry this war forward. So has anything happened? Do you think this is going to happen soon? Or do you think the Israelis are made de facto just wait out the Ramadan period until it carries out this attack? I mean, really, what is the Israelis waiting for at this point?
Right. No, this is a very good question. Actually, the IDF had this Zoom conference that they occasionally do with, you know, with reporters. And anyway, they give the operational updates and whatever. Anyway, this subject came up. And Daniel Hagari, which was the international spokesperson, or the IDF spokesperson, rather. And he said that, you know, he talked about Rafah. And so the problem is, and this is what he outlined, that there is about, he said, roughly like 1.5 million people in Rafah right now, those who are displaced and those who, just, you know, have always lived there. And trying to get those people out, you know, it takes a long time, right? So, and it can take some, like, imagine 1.5 million people. So something like that can take many weeks. What he said is that they're waiting for the right operational conditions. So that can mean like so much, right?
Anything, yes. Anyway,
so it could be even politics, which it probably is. I think everything is politics right now. That's what's controlling this war.
Yeah, and on that point, Joe, like, and this is my point, right? Obviously, the Biden administration doesn't want Israel to launch that operation. They've been very clear about that in the press. Either the Israelis are going to do this or not do this operation. I just don't understand. I mean, unless they think that they can get political backing from the U.S., but I just don't see it with the Biden administration at this point.
No, I everything indicates to me, from what I've observed, they'll go ahead with it, even if they don't have support of the United States. I mean, they've even hinted at this. I mean, they've been saying it over and over. We're going into Rafah. It's going to happen. So I think that there's a compromise that should be made here between the United States and Israel, right? Because let's be honest here. Hamas is benefiting from this, how can you say? I don't want to call it a spat. Maybe it is disagreement, okay, between the United States and Israel. I mean, and it doesn't help, okay, especially with negotiations, because we've got to remember there are ongoing negotiations for a temporary ceasefire to get hostages, right? And in some of these, there's some different numbers floating around there, but some of these hostages are female Israeli soldiers. And there's numbers that I've seen that are, you know, 40 hostages for 700,
yeah,
800
hostages. Yeah, absolutely, yeah, insane. It's
crazy. And some of these guys are lifers, right? These guys are serious criminals. And so, yeah, and regardless, this type of the spat, right, this disagreement, it affects those negotiations. It gives Hamas leverage, right? Like, okay, well, you know what? We're just going to wait it out. And then eventually Israel's just going to have to agree to our demand. And the biggest stipulation, of course, is that Hamas wants an end to this war. That's why these negotiations have been dragging so long, is that Hamas wants to end the war. Israel's like, no, we're not ending it, right? So This is what's been dragging out the negotiations, or at least one of the stipulations. So nevertheless, yeah, all of this fighting is helping Hamas between the fighting between Israel and the United States is political nonsense, which I think really is. So that's where it's at right now.
Yeah, and that gets to the point. The United Nations Security Council, the U.S. abstained from the vote. It did not veto the vote that demands a ceasefire. I mean, this is clearly what the world wants. And the U.S., by abstaining from that vote, is the Biden administration is essentially saying they don't want that either. The U.S. is saying that a truce, and again, this is, you know, it must be part of a hostage deal. Yeah, none of, you know, and by the way, this is what really bothers me about this. You know, look, this is from the American citizen part of it. There's still, what, 6 American hostages? Is that correct?
Something like that. Yeah. It's about that. Yeah.
The U.S. is providing aid into Gaza. We can't get one hostage released for conducting airdrops and preparing to create a pier and for withholding a veto.
All that helps Hamas, by the way.
Exactly. And, you know, because look, people don't understand this. Well, that's just going to the Palestinian people. In a siege situation, guess who gets first crack at the food, at the medicine, at the fuel? The ones who hold the guns. And guess who's holding the guns in Gaza? And yeah, this is just absolutely maddening. Watch this play out. You know, I still go, you know, I think I could speak for you in this. You can feel free to tell me no, but we are still amazed that the Israelis are, you know, able to, what, we're 5+ months on, still able to take the fight to Hamas and company and their allies in Gaza. I mean, but this is the political pressure that we both feared. Is that right, John?
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. We've been talking since day one, you know? Yeah. And it just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I understand the administration's arguments about civilian deaths, but Israel is so close to dismantling Hamas in the Gaza Strip, at least as close as it's ever been to doing it, and as close as it ever will be, I imagine. So why just force Israel to stop? It doesn't, or just precision attacks or strikes. I'm sorry, but that's not going to happen. Precision airstrikes does not remove Hamas.
It can't, Joe. There's hundreds of miles of tunnels.
Yeah, the tunnels.
Thousands of Hamas fighters still out there. You can't do this. And this is complete ignorance by Biden officials. I don't know if they're military officials are saying this, although I think I've heard some American military officials stating, you know, parroting this line. It's a complete misunderstanding. Look, the reality is the quickest way to get aid to Palestinian civilians who are not involved in this is for this operation to end. And for this operation to end, either Hamas needs to surrender or they need to be defeated militarily. Yeah. That's it. You know, but dragging this out drags out the humanitarian issues, and that plays to Hamas's hands as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And then that's exactly it right there. So that's why you're seeing so much resistance from the Israelis regarding these nonsense. It's just nonsense coming from the United States, the Biden administration.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the talk of, you know, you have senators calling for the overthrow of the Israeli government, which is, by the way, a unity government. This is just absolute madness in my mind. I never thought I'd really live to see the United States, and dare I say, turn on Israel in this fashion. It's really, now, Prime Minister Netanyahu canceled the delegation to D.C., and I say good on him. I think it's time for the Israelis to send a message. I know they're dependent on the U.S. for weapons and munitions and whatnot, but at some point, the political pressure, I mean, I realize we're talking politics here, but, you know, from the supporters of Israel and Congress have to put that pressure on the administration to just stop this and support our ally of Israel as it's fighting an existential war against a group that attacked Israel in such a barbaric manner. I just can't imagine someone, the British or the French, telling us after 9/11, you know, as the buildings are smoking or the what remains of them, that we need to moderate our response, that, you know, maybe we should get into a ceasefire agreement with Al-Qaeda. It's just, yeah. And yet here we are. Right. Well,
we're Russia with the Islamic State, you know, that happened over last few days, you know.
Can
you
imagine? Exactly. I mean, whatever we, you know, the horrific attacks like that require a response. I mean, this is what governments are. This is the remit. This is what they have to do in order to survive, to protect the people. And, you know, Hamas can end, you know, we've said this from day one, Joe, Hamas could end this war at any time by surrendering, mm-hmm. and that they choose not to, that they put Palestinians, not the Israelis, Hamas puts civilians at risk by every day by continuing this fight, by dragging this out.
Exactly.
It's a feature and not a bug for Hamas. They want civilian casualties.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. They leverage the Palestinian population for their benefit. And that's, they've been doing that for years. It's nothing new, right? So
they're great at it. And the UN and Europe and now the US plays into their hand.
Yeah.
It just gives them all the dealing them cards under the table. This is Hamas is smiling. Mm-hmm. They have to be smiling. They have to be thinking that we can make it out of this. We can survive just based on the actions of the US. Well, let's turn to the West Bank, Joe. There are a couple of events there over the last couple of days. On Friday, there was a sniper attack that killed an IDF soldier, and I believe the battalion commander was wounded as well. Tell us a little bit about this. Is this commonplace in the West Bank, or is this an escalation in Europe?
Right. No, this is very good. So the West Bank has always been an issue pre October 7th, since something I've tracked closely since. Can't believe I'm saying it's June 2021. I can actually point the day, the event when it happened, when everything just started going downhill. But anyway, so the West Bank, for listeners that don't know, the West Bank has been under uptick in violence led by terrorist organizations that operate there, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, and others. Many of them either funded or supported by Iran. And so what we've seen the last 2.5 years or so is a lot of clashes, a lot of fighting between Israeli forces and terrorist organizations, also terrorist attacks against Israeli civilians and against Palestinian civilians too, by these terror groups. So over the weekend, or just a few days ago, what happened, and I'll say this too, I'll caveat this, that this is an emerging trend here. So a former Palestinian Authority or member of Palestinian Authority security forces, his name is Mujahid Mansour. He basically set up a ambush. He started firing on a vehicle I can't recall if it had Israeli soldiers in it. Anyway, a manhunt ensued. This was in the West Bank, and a manhunt ensued, and it appears that he had set up he knew what he was doing, okay, because he had previous military experience, all right? And so he started shooting at the soldiers because he was armed. He killed a member of the Duvdevan unit, which is a special unit. He also caused injuries as well to other Israeli forces members of the Israeli forces. Nevertheless, it was a big manhunt. Actually, it lasted for hours in the West Bank. It was like 6 or 7 hours. He ended up getting taken out by a helicopter, right? Nevertheless, it was a big deal, right? So, because as I mentioned before, this emerging trend is that over the last couple of years, I've observed, and others have observed this too, that more and more members, former and active members of the Palestinian Authority's security forces, which receives our hard-earned tax dollars, American tax dollars, are carrying out terrorist attacks. Okay, so. And it's not just a couple guys, you know, in the last few years. We're talking dozens, either police officers or members of the security services, whichever branch that the PA has. So this is this trend that we've been noticing, and it's serious, right? Because, you know, if the PA can't, you know, if the PA can't get their control, the lawlessness in the West Bank with these terrorist groups, and they can't even control their own security services members. How are the Israelis supposed to trust them with anything, right? So, or much less govern the West Bank or Gaza Strip, right? So that's what happened over the weekend. And again, it's disturbing, this trend. And of course, you know, it's not surprising, unfortunately, this uptick in violence. This is just one thing in the last couple of weeks of West Bank violence. It's going up. And we'll talk about another subject here in a moment, or a similar subject with weapons smuggling. But seriously, like Ramadan, like the Israelis have been saying now during Ramadan, or before even Ramadan started, that it was going to be turbulent times during Ramadan. And so far, it's turning up to be true. So, but yeah, so that's what happened, at least in this one incident over the last few days.
Yeah, before we turn to the weapon smuggling, you know, there's a meme out there that makes me both laugh and cry at the same time. And in the one picture, it's the Israeli city at night, and you can see the Iron Dome missiles with the trails going up into the sky. And it says, that picture is titled "Our Tax Dollars." And then next to it is the Palestinian missiles and their trails being fired into Israel. And it also says, "Somehow also our tax dollars." Yeah. And it's perfect. That's exactly what you're talking about there with, you know, the Palestinian security forces attacking Israelis as we fund them. I when I did a trip to Israel, I want to say it was like 2017 or 18. And I can't remember what city we went into in the West Bank, but a Palestinian security forces, you know, it was a visit, you know, and got to visit the base. And boy, we got the stink eye from those guys on the way in and the way out. And all I could think of is, A, I hope they don't kill me. But B, I can't believe I fund people that hate me. And that's really what we're witnessing there. But let's turn to there's an Iranian weapons smuggling operation that was derailed in the West Bank. So our executive director at FDD, Mark Dubowitz, he has a great tweet on this from this morning.
Yes.
And with some pictures and, you know, list of the weapons and names of a couple of of the Iranian officials, or I'm assuming they're IRGC Quds Force officials who were involved in this. Tell us about this, Joe. What did they recover? And, you know, what I always think whenever I see the pictures of these things, I'm like, well, this is what they got. It's like drugs smuggling operations, right? You always get the tip of the iceberg. Wow, we seized 3 tons, and you're going, oh God, that means 300 tons of cocaine just made it through, right?
Probably.
And right. And you know, I don't know what the ratios are here in the West Bank, but you know, if they got this, you know, something else made it through. So tell us about this raid, what they recovered, what this means. And is this just another day in the West Bank, or is this something different?
Right. So, this is pretty significant for sure. It was announced this morning, essentially the IDF, and it's an operation by the IDF and the Shin Bet, Israel's security agency, that in recent months, they didn't specify when, but detail exactly when, but recent month, Iranian agents of the IRGC, and they actually named a couple of them. One is he's the head of the Special Operations Department of the intelligence of the IRGC. His name is Jawad Rafati, and another guy who is the Special Operations Unit Quds Force in Syria. He's the head of Unit 840, Asghar Bahadi. So they named the IDF and ISA. They named these two guys who are responsible for smuggling weapons into the West Bank. Now, we've known about attempts to smuggle weapons into the West Bank. That's not new, all right? Especially by Iran, by Hezbollah. We did a piece on Hezbollah, I think about weapons smuggling in the West Bank. Or, you know, it's been on a long war journal. We've talked about this, right? So it's not a surprise. However, the thing here is that these aren't just guns, right? That we've been seeing in the past, our automatic weapons. There's RPGs, C4 explosives, Semtex, 10 kilograms of Semtex. I'm just reading off the list here. 15 RPG launchers, got hand grenades, what the IDF described as peripheral shrapnel charges, and anti-tank mines, okay? So we have to remember, the IDF or the Israeli border police, when they go into the West Bank, they're in jeeps, they're in lightly armored vehicles, right? They're not going in there with tanks. They're not going in there with Namer APCs. It's just, you know, something like this, like these, for instance, the RPGs or the anti-tank mines, they would just obliterate whatever IDF would go, the IDF has in the West Bank right now. So so this is serious because it's not just a couple, not just a few weapons, right? This is a big haul. And that's the concerning thing, because Israel's been saying for a long time now that Iran is trying to. And we've been saying it too at FDD for a long time. We've been warning about it. I mean, we've got all sorts of articles and pieces about it that Iran is trying to foment violence in the West Bank. They're opening up a front against Israel in the West Bank. And this is it right here. This is how they do it. They are they're smuggling these types of advanced weapons. You don't see these types of weapons in the West Bank. Only the guns, right? Only automatic weapons and handguns. Some, and then locally made IEDs. Okay, that's pretty much the gist of it for the West Bank. But this is something completely different. This is this would be a game changer, that's for sure. So yeah, so this is big, and Iran is involved here. So so it's something we've been it's concerning, and I just don't know. But the problem is also we don't know exactly where it's coming from, where it's being smuggled through. Is it being smuggled through Jordan? Probably, you know.
Probably, yeah. It's the logical place, right?
Yeah.
That northern border is sealed off.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't think they would. It just be, would it make sense? I mean, there's been cases where drones have been flown into the West Bank, but yeah, that's rare, and I don't think it doesn't really work. So I think it's through Jordan. I'm just a guess here. The IDF didn't say where or how, but where it's coming from. But if they called it through, I think various channels or something like that, whatever that means. But yeah, so
that's usually what countries say when they don't want to point a finger.
Because some of these weapons did make it through the West Bank to the West Bank. It says it in their report that they had been smuggled into Judea and Samaria, okay, into the West Bank. So they had already made it in there. So that's the problem, right? Because you were saying it earlier, they made the UK, you can catch something, one thing, but who knows how much made it across. So, and it's one thing I want to note is that I have yet to observe any of these type of weapons being used or employed in attacks in the West Bank, at least the big things like the RPGs and the anti-tank mines. I haven't seen any of that used yet. But eventually, I think it will. This is just the evolution of this conflict in the West Bank. It's been building. Like, the groups have been getting better at attacking IDF troops. They've been building IEDs. They've been placing them in strategic roads. On strategic roads where the IDF usually goes through. So I'm not surprised at this, unfortunately. So and if we start seeing this again, I won't be surprised either. This type of stuff being employed by groups. So the West Bank's not getting any better, and eventually I think Israel's going to have to turn its focus there, because Hamas is operating there, obviously Islamic Jihad and other groups.
Yeah. Any indication, Joe, on what groups these were going to?
They did not say, but I think it's the three main ones. Definitely Islamic Jihad, Hamas, and Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades. Those three are the main groups in the West Bank fomenting violence. Number one, Islamic Jihad, by far. They are taking the lead on pretty much everything in West Bank, just because they have so many different branches in the West Bank, especially in the Northern West Bank. So there's more of them, okay? So then there's the other groups, like I said, Hamas, Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades. And then there's some smaller groups as well that may get some weapons, but nevertheless, those are the groups, I think. But the IDF didn't say who it was going to, but it's, I mean, if you've tracked this long enough, you can probably get a pretty good guess to who it was going to.
Yeah, that makes 100%, Joe. The last item, the Islamic resistance in Iraq claimed that it conducted a drone attack into Israel. That's claimed several of these attacks, dozens of them, I would dare I say, Joe. In the past, some most have been intercepted, although I believe a couple have made it through. What's the status on its latest claim? Were they able to successfully attack Israel? Was it intercepted?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, actually. This is very good. Something that's just been annoying the heck out of me for a long time now. So what the Islamic resistance in Iraq has been doing, they've kind of switched gears here. So they went from focusing a lot on American troops in Iraq and Syria, with some claims of drone attacks on in against Israel, especially in the Golan, right, near the Syrian border. But now they've switched to mostly focusing on attacking Israeli targets, right? At least claiming to have been doing that. Nevertheless, these claims have become quite exaggerated, in my opinion. Attacks against, you know, Ashdod, which is on the Mediterranean coast, the Ministry of Defense in Tel Aviv, there's some other ones as well. I think it was an electrical power station in Haifa, which is in northwestern Israel or northern Israel. But without any evidence from the Israeli side or reports from the Israeli side that something has happened, right? So they've gotten good at it, because what they do is they publish a statement. Okay, you know, Islamic resistance in Iraq did this, that. We targeted this site in Israel, deep inside the so-called Israeli occupation or the Israeli entity. And then they'll follow it up with this video, right? They'll have a little card that says what they attacked, the date, the Islamic resistance in Iraq. And then they show a drone flying off, right, being launched. That's it. That's all it's been every time. And that, to me, I'm sorry, but that's not enough evidence just to demonstrate that you actually attack what you're attacking, right? I mean, these videos could be so old. It can be from something different. I mean, you understand, Bill. We've seen these type of, we've seen so many attacks by the Islamic resistance in Iraq that these videos can be from any one of these attacks, because it's been going on for years. So with all sorts of stuff. So nevertheless, I think it's just, everything is, they're just lying. They're exaggerating and lying just to make it appear that they're doing something right. But there's no evidence, zero, that these attacks, at least the ones that are inside, very like deep inside Israeli territory, the Ministry of Defense, I mean, stuff like that. I just, no evidence that they actually did it. But nevertheless, they continue to publish this stuff. But I just, in my opinion, I wouldn't believe it. Now, if it was something like on the Golan Heights, something closer to Syria, then okay, maybe. And then if you can corroborate it with local news, which a lot of times you can, then I can believe that. But nothing like the Tel Aviv attacks or something like that. It's just exaggerating. It's ridiculous.
You know, I have a theory on the Islamic resistance in Iraq, which of course is Hezbollah brigades. All of the other terror groups, right? Sabah, right. Haq, and all of them. Mm-hmm. So they're not attacking U.S. bases anymore. I suspect some kind of deal has been cut between the U.S. and Iran in order for this to happen. And then lo and behold, a week or so ago, the U.S. frees up $10 billion in funds for the Iranians. I think this is a case, Joe, and I think you nailed it, that they have to show that they're not attacking U.S. forces. That drew a lot of headlines, put a lot of pressure on the U.S. They have to show that they're doing something. And that's why they're trying to inflate these claims, because they look pretty impotent at this point in time, without attacking the U.S. What really can they do, to show that they're in support of Hamas and all the other terror groups? But, you know, just a theory. I can't prove that one.
Right. No, it's exactly, and I forgot to mention that they're doing it in support of Hamas. And, so nevertheless, I think there are occasions where they do try. They do try to get something through, but it's shot down. But I think most of the claims, especially those ones that are, you know, again, deep inside Israeli territory, I'm sorry, but you're not crossing Israel with a drone. If you can, if you don't usually make it through, you know, just getting to the border area of Israel, you're not going to get through. I'm sorry, especially during wartime, you're not going to get something like Tel Aviv. And we've talked about this before too, by the way, that there's a possibility that Islamic resistance in Iraq is operating in Lebanon. So it could be that they're trying from there too. So we've seen a Syrian organization, Syrian armed group operate in Lebanon already, and other foreign fighters. So it's possible, but I haven't seen anything to demonstrate that is the case. But again, you never know. Hopefully we might find out, you know, when all this is over, who knows when that will be. But nevertheless, yeah, I think a lot of their claims are just a bunch of, it's just exaggeration. I'll be nice about it.
Look, the way that the Islamic resistance in Iraq, you know, operated in Syria, it really makes sense that when they're ready to join the fray, that they would do so from Lebanon as well. Yeah. The ideological and spiritual brethren of Hezbollah. Mm-hmm. Hezbollah helped alongside with the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, Quds Force, established many of these groups, built them, armed them, trained them. How do we know? We captured Musa Ali Dakduk, who's a top level Hezbollah commander, basically their special forces commander, who was assigned, you know, went to Iraq. By the way, we let him go. Then the Iraqis let him go, and he's back in action. I believe he's the head of Radwan. Is that right, Joe?
You know, I don't know, but he's definitely up
there. Involved in at least the Syrian Hezbollah. I forget his.
Yeah.
He definitely his remit, but he's neck deep in there. And I could definitely see him calling in favors if he's if he needs it. They're probably working together, very likely not promoting it to draw attention to it. But this is something the Israelis should definitely keep an eye on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm sure they are. I'm sure there's a lot Israelis aren't saying for obvious reasons. But hopefully we'll find out one of these days. I would love to know like a type of after action report here.
Yeah.
When all this is over.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Joe, thanks as always. Excellent conversation. Let's get back on board Monday and we'll see where we are. Thanks, everyone, for listening to today's episode of Generation Jihad. Just a reminder, you can listen to us on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe to Generation Jihad and leave us a review, preferably a positive one, but only if we earned it. Thanks again, and we'll see you all again real soon.